ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
यत्र
नैसर्गा
दुर्वैरा
सहसं
नृमृगादय
मित्रा
जिठा
वा
धृता
उरुत् हर्षकारिकम् यत्र
नैसर्गदुर्वैरा
सह सन्नृमृगादय यत्र वेर्
नैसर्गा
बै नेचर्
दुर्वैरा
लिविङ्ग् इन् एन्मिटि
Sahasan
live together. Nri, human beings. Mriga adayaha,
and animals.
Mitrani,
friends.
Iva,
life.
Ajita,
of Lord Shri Krishna.
Avasa,
residence.
Druta,
gone away.
Rut,
anger.
Tarshaka adikam,
thirst and so on.
Translation. Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of the Lord, where there is no hunger, thirst, anger, or thirst. Though naturally inimical, both human beings and fierce animals live there together in transcendental friendship. Report. The word vana means forest. We are afraid of the forest and do not wish to go there, but in Vrindavan, the forest animals are as good as demigods, for they have no envy. Even in this material world, in the forest, the animals live together. And when they go to drink water, they do not attack anyone. Envy develops because of sense gratification. But in Vrindavan, there is no sense gratification. For the only aim is Krishna's satisfaction. Even in this material world, the animals in Vrindavan are not envious of the sadhus who live there. The sadhus keep cows and supply milk to the tigers, saying, "Come here and take a little milk." Thus, envy and malice are unknown in Vrindavan. That is the difference between Vrindavan and the ordinary world. We are horrified to hear the name of Vana, the forest. But in Vrindavan, there is no such horror. Everyone there is happy by pleasing Krishna. Krishna kirtana ghana nana nartana paro. Whether a Goswami or a tiger or other ferocious animals, everyone's business is the same, to please Krishna. Even the tigers are also devotees. This is the specific qualification of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, everyone is happy. The calf is happy, the cat is happy. The dog is happy, the man is happy. Everyone. Everyone wants to serve Krishna in a different capacity, and thus there is no envy. One may sometimes think that the monkeys in Vrindavan are envious, because they cause mischief and steal food. But in Vrindavan, we find that the monkeys are allowed to take butter, which Krishna himself distributes. Krishna personally demonstrates that everyone has the right to live. This is Vrindavan life. Why should I live and you die? No. That is material life. The inhabitants of Vrindavan think, whatever is given by Krishna, let us divide it as prasad and eat. This mentality cannot appear all of a sudden, but it will gradually develop with Krishna consciousness. By sadhana, one can come to this platform. In the material world, one may collect funds all over the world in order to distribute food freely. Yet those to whom food is given may not even feel appreciative. The value of Krishna consciousness, however, will gradually be very much appreciated. For instance, in an article about the temple of the Hare Krishna movement in Durban, South Africa, the Durban Post reported, quote, "All the devotees here are very active in the service of Lord Krishna, and the results are obvious to see. Happiness, good health, peace of mind, and the development of all good qualities." Unquote. This is the nature of Vrindavan. Harav avaktasya kuto mahat guna. Without Krishna consciousness, happiness is impossible. One may struggle, but one cannot have happiness. We are therefore trying to give human society the opportunity for a life of happiness, good health, peace of mind, and all good qualities through God consciousness. So these principles that are applied here, then they're happening on all different levels here. So here we see, obvious is that we're talking about Vrindavan, how nice Vrindavan is. Vrindavan is wonderful, everybody interacts with each other very pleasantly. And at the same time, as we see that the Vrindavan, that the material world is also then spoken about here. In Vrindavan, then, that's the origin. So we can see that everybody and everything can live in harmony because Krishna is the center. That's why it functions. That's what makes Vrindavan. Just because you have a piece of land, then that is Vrindavan or not, that's another thing. Like we see Lord Brahma, he is not seeing Vrindavan. He knows it's Vrindavan, but he's not seeing Vrindavan. Because otherwise, how he'll come there and play mischief, right? If Krishna is the Lord, that's his place, you don't play mischief there. But he knows it's Vrindavan, but he doesn't actually know that it's the transcendental realm. So because of that, he thinks he has power there. Otherwise, why would he be foolish enough to think that he would have potency or power in Vrindavan, the transcendental realm? He is up to the edge of the material world. He can't go beyond it. So that means beyond the material coverings, those are not within his sphere of control. Right? What's inside the coverings, that's his control. But the coverings themselves and what's beyond, they have their own deities. They're in control. Right? We see Gopu Kumar, when he leaves the material world, when he leaves Brahma Loka, then he goes through the coverings of the universe. Those have their own deities, their own Ishwaras. So Brahma is not in control. He can't get beyond that. So let alone the transcendental realm. So not seeing that, then he thinks, oh yes, I can do something. I can have some fun. So then now Krishna has removed his yoga maya so that Brahma can actually see the transcendental realm. Then he's seeing this. So this is one of the very notable qualities, is that there's no hunger, there's no thirst, there's no anger, right? That means there's no envy, there's no attachment, and there's no anger. So that means there's no, sense gratification, material endeavor, fruit of activities, there's no speculation, there's no impersonalism, and there's no voidism. These are all absent in Vrindavan. All these, they don't exist there. It means that thirst for the material energy, the hunger would be the material, the karma. The thirst, that would be the jnana. And then the anger, that would be when all that doesn't work, when there's frustration. So these are absent because Krishna is the center. So all these living entities can therefore work together. This is the only way it can function. Prabhupada's given here is that materialists are doing. But if they become God conscious, then everything is there. Opportunity for a life of happiness, good health, peace of mind, and all qualities through God consciousness. So that means when they recognize that this belongs to God, then that same, to that degree it's understood, to that degree Vrindavan will manifest. That's the point. You can go to Vrindavan, you can stand there and not actually be in Vrindavan. Because we will see the material covering. Just as Brahma is seeing the material covering. If he's seeing the material covering, why we won't see the material covering? Krishna removes that. Why does he remove it? Because of that surrender, because of that bhakti. That's where Vrindavan starts. When bhakti is there, that's the beginning of Vrindavan. And where there's no bhakti, then it's not Vrindavan. Right? That's the thing. Because the devotees are absorbed in devotion, they will always call that place Vrindavan. But Vrindavan meaning the transcendental world, right? To the demons, Vrindavan is just a place on the map, right? You have to get somewhere. So it's a place on the map. So they're trying to get there. But for Krishna, but for the devotees, it's not. Therefore, whatever the situation, the devotees always call it Vrindavan, because that's where devotion is happening. That's where it's going on. So then, if that's there, then the various kinds of living entities, all everything works there. So every living entity is unique. They all have their own idea of what goes on, what they should do, what they shouldn't do. So that all finds its perfection in Vrindavan, if Krishna's made the center. There is absolutely no other way to bring it together. One can try many ways. The karmis have been trying since time immemorial to create some unity. Devotees even sometimes take up material forms to create unity. But if you really study, one will see no unity has been created. Because you cannot create unity unless Krishna is the center. Everything comes from Krishna. That's the only common point. You have everything in this creation. There's 8,400,000 species. Where is their common point? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you could say, is common. But then there may be a fight over it. Unless your eating and the others eating are completely separate, right? You eat the cookie, they eat the slugs. Okay, then no problem, right? But then you don't have an argument. You know, there may be a fight if the slug starts to eat your cookie. Then yes, that's a problem. Then there may be a clash of interest. But otherwise, then there's no common. There's where it means. Then you can say, okay, yes, see, we're peacefully living here. But the point is it's not peaceful living. Peaceful means progressive. Peaceful, just peace, that's impersonalism. We just want the pain to go away. But that's not enough. It has to go beyond that. It has to be progressive. It has to be dynamic. It has to be bringing us closer and closer to Krishna. That makes it dynamic. So then, this way, then the animals and the ferocious animals and the humans can live together, because Krishna is the central point. Krishna's laws, and then here, then they're all devotees, so then Krishna directly. That's the common point. So then it functions. This will bring everyone together. Otherwise, it's not possible. Right? People can go on, they can write pages and pages, stand up, talk all they like. You can go to Hyde Park, people will be standing on their orange grates. They have so many philosophies. It's very nice, right? It's like that. It warms the atmosphere. It's very cold there. So it's a great service. People huddle around to warm up. So it's nice, but it doesn't do anything. Hasn't done anything, hasn't. We look at history, nothing has improved. People say it's improved, where is the improvement? Right? You have a nice, can, you can spray things on you, and above you, then you have a nice hole in which the sun comes through. Like that. So you have so many nice things, right? You have a nice factory, you have nice machines, right? That. And, you know, you have a nice tap, right? That. But the factory that makes the tap pollutes the water that comes through the tap. So therefore, you have to buy bottled water, right? The plant that makes the bottled water uses the plastic that also pollutes the water. So now you can't even get the good water to put in the bottle. So this is material life. So we have to see that from top to bottom. Material life can be engaged in the Lord's service, as seen here. As soon as it becomes engaged in Krishna's service, that's what becomes special. When it's connected to Krishna, that's when it becomes wonderful. So that is what will create Vrindavan. Right? That's what creates Vrindavan. So this material forest is a very terrible place. Then the only thing that will bring together all the different mentalities that are there on the planet is through Krishna consciousness. Right? Because it's very definite. Right? You talk about a particular country, and everybody can tell you the common qualities of that country. Right? Otherwise, why would that concept be there? Right? Why would that concept be there practically every last living entity that there is on the planet? That this species of life, this group of people act like this? Right? Because there is some common. Of course, there's individuality within it, but there's a general flavor. You know, you can say, okay, French are like this way, Germans this way, English that way, Indians that way, dogs like this, cat like that, bird like this. You can say. So, how do you bring all that together? They're all different. Okay? By Krishna. No material process has brought any of these people together so far. Right? Sometimes for economic gain, you can bring them together. Right? You can create something. If you see if there's anything united, what is that uniting factor? Right? Economics. That's it. Right? Is there a common, the EU, is there a common religion? Is there a common philosophy? Is there a common goal, you know, on a higher level? Or is it simply an economic consideration? Right? What do they discuss? The economics of it. They'll benefit by it, they go for it. They won't benefit by it, they don't go for it. Very simple. Someone has a weak currency, they don't want to join. They have a strong currency, I mean they want to join. They have a strong currency, they don't want to join. You have produce and all that, you're going on nicely, another place doesn't, they don't want to join because then all your stuff gets taken away and your prices are regulated. So it's economics. That's what's bringing together. Right? If you look at the modern thing of bringing two parties together, what's the common principle? What they're both going to get out of it, right? Win, win. And what is that win? Win means Krishna consciousness. Is it said God consciousness, God consciousness? No. It's gain, profit, gain, profit. I mean, we have to look at this very, very seriously. The tendency is to gloss it over. We grow up in it like fish don't notice the water. So when we grow up in the forest, as ferocious animals, we don't notice the forest. We don't notice it as terrible. We don't notice these things. But the human beings do. So Prabhupada's pointing out, the human being can live peacefully in this forest. Why? Because all the animals are God conscious. So that's the point, is the animalistic nature. Prabhupada said you don't have to change anything. Your situation, you just change your consciousness, that's all. Doesn't matter if you're there in your three-piece pinstripe suit on Wall Street. Doesn't matter. Change your consciousness. Then it will progress. And if you don't change your consciousness, even you dress up exactly the same as the next person, it's animals in the forest. Maybe Krishna's animals in the forest, but it's animals in the forest. Because here, Vrindavan life means everybody's happy. It's not swan eat swan. Right? It's progressive. So this is something serious that devotees have to look at very hard. By conditioned nature, we don't look. Lord Brahma was not looking. He's the Lord of the universe. He's doing his things. He sets all the rules, right? You have, of all the Dharma Shastras, the main one is Manu. And that is what Brahma spoke to his sons. Right? The knowledge that Brahma spoke to his sons and is heard from the lips of Bhrigu, that's Brahma Samhita. I mean, that's Manu Samhita. Right? When it's what we hear, the same knowledge from Narad Muni, then we see that in the Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto, when Narad Muni speaks Dharma Shastra to Yudhishthira. Right? So it's meant for the devotees. It's very high level Krishna conscious thing. But Bhrigu speaks, it's more general. It's for everyone. Whatever, if you're a devotee or you're a materialist, then everybody can follow. So Brahma, he sets the rules. Where did he get the rules from? He got it from Krishna. Then he forgets. He got it from Krishna. He forgot. So how will not forget? So unless you really endeavor, then there's every possibility to forget. That's the principle. We can't take it for granted that we are Krishna conscious. Our Krishna conscious, that from moment to moment, must be seen, must be checked. Are we progressing? Is it dynamic? You know, are we getting stuck? Is it okay? That's good enough. Right? Because whenever we say that's good enough, that's where it stops. Right? That's the principle. As soon as it's good enough, it stops. Progress is not there. Why? Because we want result, we want happiness, we want recognition, we want these things. So as soon as we're there, it stops. So it's never good enough. That's complacency. Prabhupada always warns us against that complacency. Because complacency, if it's good enough, then wherever we are, then that's good enough to stay here, because in Vrindavan it's never good enough. They never figure it's good enough. Right? Even the Srimati Radharani, that they feel that their service is not good enough. And their service is the crown jewel of perfection. Right? The best. They still feel it's not enough. So it's always increasing. That's spiritual. Material means it's the same. But one must always remember is there's no such thing as just the same unless it's connected to Krishna. Right? Tathasta means it's in the middle. That's our nature, to sit in the fence. Right? But if you sit on the fence, it's not progressive. Spiritual is progressive. So if we're not progressive, that means it's material. Right? Means the neutral setting by default is pushed over to negative. Automatic. If you're not progressively conscious towards Krishna, the setting is automatically set to inimical towards Krishna. That's the thing. Prabhupada says you can't stay in one place. You're either progressing or falling back. So that's the point. This, you can't sit in the middle. Right? When it comes to progress, you either have to be moving forward or you're falling back. One may say, but Krishna is the Lord of maintenance. He keeps things. Brahma's creating it and Shiva's destroying it. But that's because it's connected to him. He is spiritual, therefore there can be maintenance. Because the spiritual world means maintenance. Right? It is eternal. Material world means it's created, it's destroyed. In Vaikuntha you have Vishnu. He is there, he's sitting, it's going on. So the material world means you add two things to that. Creation and destruction. Spiritual world is no creation. Spiritual world is no destruction. So when you add those two ends, then you get the material world. So therefore the only connection with the spiritual world is that middle point of maintenance. But that's because it's connected to Krishna. Creation and destruction aren't connected. You can connect them, but they aren't naturally connected. That's the thing. By nature, you create something doesn't mean it's God conscious. You destroy something doesn't mean it's God conscious. But if you maintain it according to the Shastras, then at least you have to be somewhat God conscious. At least enough to accept God in the form of the scriptures. Otherwise it can't be done. So that element is there. So that's different from progress or not. So this is the specialness of Vrindavan, is that it's wonderful because God becomes the center. Then all these different situations in life, all of them can peacefully be together. Very peacefully. Otherwise it's not possible. It just doesn't happen. You look at it. You look in history. Is there any situation? Over the last so many thousand years of so-called recorded modern history, has there been any peace? Right? Has there? No. You look at it, no. Right? People are thinking that there's some new conflict going on in the Middle East. That conflict goes back 4,000 years. You know? And it hasn't been any different. And the parties are exactly the same. It's still the Jews and the Palestinians. That tract of land was originally called Palestine, and the people living there were Palestinians. And then, you know, according to the Bible, that was given to the followers of Abraham. And they finally, you know, they got a hold of the place. But they were living there peacefully. But then, because of so much 4,000 years of inimicalness, they pushed each other into two parts. Right? So they kind of like, who sits in the middle? The Jews sit in the middle. The Palestinians got either side. But we can see that, you know, even that, you go back, is that Jordan was also Palestine. Syria was also Palestine. All of that was Palestine. So nobody likes the Palestinians, somehow or another. Why? That's another thing. But these are not new. It goes back. That's the point. Somehow or another, this goes back. So it's not new. So in 4,000 years, they couldn't work it out. Right? In Europe, still they're discussing over borders, this, that. That hasn't been worked out. Your Asia hasn't been worked out. You're still fighting over that. So where is it? Where is that peace that people talk about? Where is it? The politicians, the philosophers, they talk about it. Where is it? It's not there. It has never been there. Individuals have attained it. And if we look, those individuals have attained it by becoming God conscious. By giving up their connection to this world. As soon as this sense gratification, Prabhupada says, that's the key. As soon as there's sense gratification, then immediately at that point, then you don't have, there's no cooperation. Right? You can bargain a deal, but there's no cooperation. There's no satisfaction. So that's what the material life means. You broker a deal, right? Business, you broker a deal with somebody else that you both make profit. Family life, you broker a deal. That's what's going on. Any position, politics, you broker a deal. Right? Now if you connect that to Krishna, then it becomes spiritual. Then it's Vrindavan. Otherwise, on its own, it's just business. It's economics. And for what purpose? Sense gratification. Right? No one's doing economics for liberation. Right? They're doing economics for sense gratification. So this whole, as soon as that economic mood is there, then immediately you leave the platform of Vrindavan. Right? Now one can say in Vrindavan they're doing economics, right? They're keeping cows, they're making milk. Yes. But it's all centered around Krishna, how Krishna likes it done. Then everything can be connected. Your sense gratification can be connected. Your desire for freedom from material energy can be connected. Your need for the interaction of relationships based on religious principles, that can be connected to Krishna. So it all can be connected. But that's the point. If Krishna is not the center, then it's a forest where you can't get on. The animals, all they do is they don't get along. Otherwise, then that same forest becomes God conscious. Then everybody can live together. Everyone can be peaceful. So that's what Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas then are offering here. So this point shows that the place where one lives, the situation, then becomes nice because Krishna is the center. Right? Because the place then is where the activity will happen. If the place is not God conscious, then what will be? So that means the source of whatever you're doing, your activity, then must be connected to Krishna. Whatever you do, it must be connected to Krishna. Your activity must be connected to Krishna. How you do that activity must be connected to Krishna. Like that. Whatever you involve in that activity must be connected to Krishna. Your goal must be Krishna. Then it works very, very nicely. So that's the point, is the theme of whatever is going on. The underlying theme has to be Krishna. Then it works well. Any questions on this or comments?
I'd like to know how it works the offense in the dark. If you commit offense in the dark, there is very difficult for you after.
Very, if you commit offense in the dark, then it's very difficult.
Very, I don't know. God, it's very bad. But in Mayapur, we pray Vrindavan and Mayapur is the same. Mm-hmm. But in Mayapur you can commit offense, you don't have to make the same.
Same thing. Okay, it's just like this. Okay, let us say in your house you are inviting over some very important people. Right? Now if the kids kind of like move around a bit, or a bit restless, laugh a bit, and this and that. Is that okay? If you're having a very formal situation happen, it's okay or not? The kids yell, scream, run around. No. Okay, let us say it's not a formal situation. It's just a normal day-to-day atmosphere. The kids are a little restless, move around from room to room, talk a bit, play a little bit. Is that okay? But that's the same. It's the same place. It's still your house. It's still your living room. Why? Then the child will ask, why is it I'm sitting in my living room and mommy gets angry with me, but then at another time I sat in the living room, she didn't get angry with me for the same thing. Why? This is inconsistent. This is unjust. In fact, we're going to take out a petition and have all the other three-year-olds sign it. Right? We get out our crayons and all that. And make a petition here. Like that. Is that making sense? They're going to have a strike, you know? They're going to...
I don't understand.
You don't understand. It means it's the same place. What's different is the mood. So that's the point, is Vrindavan is serious down to service to Krishna. There's no gap for it not being, otherwise it's not Vrindavan. Vrindavan means pure, unalloyed devotion to the son of Maharaj Nanda through his intimate, eternal associates. That is Vrindavan. Anything else is not Vrindavan. Mayapur is how you get somebody from, you know, wandering around in this forest here, eating, you know, sages and all that, up to the platform when they can take part in those eternal pastimes. That's the difference. Those same eternal associates in that then turn their attention on how to bring people into that pastime. Well, Vrindavan means you're already in. Vrindavan is for those who are in the pastime. Mayapur is for those who want to get into those pastimes. So therefore, even our approach to Vrindavan means it has to be through Lord Chaitanya. We're only there because of Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas. Otherwise, there's no chance to be in Vrindavan. Brahma couldn't enter Vrindavan. Right? The demons, as soon as they walked in, they were killed. So what is going to get into Vrindavan? Right? We're not bigger than these biggest demons. You know? We're not, you know, bigger or more intelligent or that than Brahma. So how are we going to get in? Right? It's only through Lord Chaitanya and the mercy of the Acharyas. No other way. So then in doing that, then we have to see is that there the offenses are there. So one has to be very, very careful. Well, here in Mayapur, one still has to be careful. It's not that it doesn't matter here. It's like this. For what you're spiritually doing, it may progress. But you also have to remember, for what you're doing as an offense, a reaction is there. That's the point, is Tathasta Shakti means spiritual and material function at the same place at the same time. That has to always be remembered. Right? That we, soul, are in this body. That's the influence of the Tathasta Shakti. Otherwise, you can't put the soul, which is spiritual, with material energy. Right? That the Lord and His transcendental entourage can come down and perform their pastimes in the material world, that's the Tathasta Shakti. She puts that together. That they overlap in the same place at the same time. Right? So, that's what's going on. So we have to always be able to remember is that these two things are happening at once. Right? You're becoming Krishna conscious, but the body is still being affected by the material energy. And we commit offenses, it becomes a little bit more affected by the material energy. Right? An offense to the body is received in the body. Offense in the mind is received in the mind. Offense in words is received in words. Right? It means if you've spoken offensively, people will speak about you offensively. You've thought or emotionally or relations you've had have been offensive, then that's what you're going to get. You've physically dealt in an offensive way, you will get the reaction physically. That's how it functions. So that will be going on. At the same time, you can be cultivating your Krishna consciousness. So the point is that slows you down. Especially if it's offense against the devotee. then it can remove the taste for the holy name. And living entity has to function by taste, so taste becomes replaced with material taste. Like that. So that's one has to always be careful. So if one keeps good association, if one, you know, sticks to the process given by the acharyas, then things will progress nicely because they've given this system for us, knowing who we are. Right? They haven't given this system for someone so elevated that we can't follow it. So it's been designed for us. So we can't say it's impossible, it's too difficult, it's just, no, we just have to do it. Why? And anything else is easy? It's easy to get on a, you know, you travel an hour, 2 hours to work, and then sit in the terrible office for 8 hours, and then travel another hour back. And then your reward is a microwave TV dinner and, you know, watching some television program. Right? So is that wonderful? That's something special? Right? It's difficult. That's the thing. Material world means difficulty. Now the thing is you can take that and only from difficulty do you get results, right? Because it's difficult to go to work, therefore they pay you for it. Right? I mean, if you had to go down there, they set out, you know, 100 beach chairs down on, you know, Venice Beach there. And then they invited everybody to come sit in that those chairs and get sun. They'll give you the suntan lotion. They also supply drinks like that. And then they pay you by the hour. How many hours you sit there, they're going to pay you. Ever heard of that? Yeah, no. Right? When you go to Disney World, they pay you to come there, right? They're just waiting to do some service. Right? You stay in a nice hotel, they take care of it. They pay you, right? To live there. And you go to a great restaurant, they pay you to eat their food. Right? So only through austerity do you get something. The austerity, you have to part with your money. That's your austerity. Then you get your goods. You had to go through work to do it. Therefore, they pay you. The boss pays you because it's hard work. Or he does the work himself, he gets the money. Or he does bigger work, then he gets others to help him, he shares that money. It's because of austerity. So the only way anybody's gotten anything in this world is through austerity. Right? You want knowledge, it's austere, you have to study. You want to do progress in the arts, you have to practice, it's austerity. Right? You want to, any position, anything, you have to go through austerity to get to it. So it came through the austerity. That's the thing. I did the work. No. You did the work, but what is that work? That work is austerity. So then, that's the whole point Prabhupada's pointing out, is then who should do what austerity to get what result? That's that's human life. Right? For a Brahmin, for him to study the Shastras and teach, that's his austerity. For an administrator to protect the people, that's his austerity. Right? For a business person to do some activity that creates economics, that's their austerity. And to assist others, that's the Shudra's austerity. Then by that, everybody gets whatever they need. The business person, then he goes into, okay, he'll study both this fact. He doesn't get his money. He'll take it and turn it into, he'll turn that knowledge into money. He'll start a school and make money out of it. You know, or write, some guy comes up with a book, he'll print it and make the money off of it. And if somebody has an idea, he'll make money off of it. Because he turns it into business. He turns it into his austerity. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is only through austerity has anyone in the world ever gotten anything. So if that's recognized, then the devotees understand to perform the austerities of chanting 16 rounds, following the four regular principles, following, doing their activities, you know, under the direction of the devotees. That's how they're going to get anything. They're not going to get it in another way. It's impossible. The materialists can't get it another way. The animals don't get it in another way. Right? And they'll have to go out there and chew grass all day. They can't stand the same house. They've got to move around. Right? They want to stay alive, then they got to run when they're chased by a tiger or something. They have to go through the austerity of running to save their life. You understand? And the tiger has to go through the austerity of running after the animal. They don't just lay there and the deers walk straight into their mouth. You know, it'd be difficult. The antlers would get caught, you know, in their sinuses or something. You know, it would be a problem. You know? So therefore, then, we see is that even though it's being given that there's no offense, that doesn't mean we don't try to be progressive in our attempt for Krishna consciousness. We have to be. If we're not dynamic and trying, we won't get anywhere. We have to make that step. Automatic means you perform the austerity, automatically the result comes. Not that I do nothing and automatically it comes. That's amazing, names. That's the modern. The platform of the fallen Shudra, that is their philosophy. I'll do nothing and I'll get money. Right? A Brahmin wants knowledge anyway, whether anybody else is interested or not. Right? Kshatriya wants to create a safe environment. Right? Businessman will find anything and make money off of it. Right? Like that. But if you take it where I'll do nothing and I'll get paid, that's outside Varnashram. That's the wild animals in the forest. It's a subhuman consciousness. Human, there's a dignity that I do my particular austerity, I get my result. You know, I worked for this, it wasn't handed to me. Like that. Subhuman is, I'll be given everything and I do nothing. That's animals. And even the animals are smart enough to know at least you gotta walk over to it. Right? There's a bone sitting there, you gotta get up and walk over it, at least pick it up. It's not gonna, you know, fly over to you. You know. You never see, I say, dogs carrying wands and the bones are flying at them everywhere. Is that understood? So it's not happening. You have to do it. You have to make the endeavor. So if you don't make the endeavor, then even though they're so kind, the Lord and His eternal associates, to create a place where you can get all the spiritual benefits of being in the spiritual realm without the material reactions because of our conditioned nature, and we don't make the endeavor there, then that is most unfortunate. Most unfortunate. You can't get worse than that. Like that. You know, that's worse than the just gross, unrefined materialist. It's worse than the misdirected intellectual or even the demons. The worst position you can have is have contact with devotional service and not take it. Right? That's Krishna's opinion in Gita. That's the worst position. Okay. So one has to be able to see that these two are functioning at the same time, the material and the spiritual. Material is only functioning because we're in material consciousness. We have a conditioned nature. So therefore, Krishna maintains the material world just so we can, because that's our consciousness, we can engage that consciousness in His service. Like that. Otherwise, there's no need. In Vrindavan, they don't have material consciousness, so there's no need to maintain it. Right. And Gokul is maintained only because the jivas, then they have to make that decision. They have to be able to see spiritual material. Right. Otherwise, it wouldn't be, you know, tatastha, wouldn't be, that definition wouldn't be achieved. But the residents of the eternal residents, they live in the eternal Vrindavan. The demons are in the material world. Those who are not perfect yet, haven't attained prema, they're living in both. And the closer they get to prema, then the less there's less, or practically there is no influence. There is no it's not material at all. Does that make sense? So like that, one has to take it seriously.
If you want, you commit offense and you die, you must pay immediately.
You must pay?
Immediately.
Immediately? You have to pay for an offense immediately. That's up to the Lord. Sometimes it's immediate, sometimes it's after. If immediate, then we'll get the result, yes. But if the mentality is wrong, then sometimes Krishna will wait. Just like, let's say, someone is very emotionally upset. Can you correct the problem of that being emotionally upset at that moment? Someone's very emotionally disturbed. Can you get down and talk, you know, straight talk on what's actually wrong? Yes? No. No. You just somehow to catch them in that emotional state, bring them to the point where they're less emotional, then you can talk. Right? So sometimes Krishna, if you're in the right frame of mind, he'll give it to you right then. And if not, sometimes he won't. He'll wait until it's right. And sometimes just start immediately getting results, but if you're in the wrong frame of mind, you won't see it. The emotional person, even though you're giving them the solution to their problem, they can't take it. They won't see it. Oh, no one understands, no one this, no one that. Everybody understands, right? Somebody has a problem, right? And somebody starts talking what their problem is. Just in your experience, how many seconds does it take before you understand the problem? Right? 3, 5, maximum 10, because they've got all their sentences all backwards and they won't get to the point until the end of the sentence. Guaranteed, anybody has any problem, whoever they're talking to has already understood it in the first few seconds. Guaranteed. But the person who's emotional, unless you get all emotional and bent out of shape, they figure you don't understand anything. It's probably one of the most, you know, amazing, you know, strangeties about the emotional platform. Because unless you are feeling, you can't understand. So one has to understand that understanding is in the intelligence, not in the mind. And realization is another thing. If you realize, then you won't get emotional like that. So everybody understands. But no one understands. Everybody understands. The person who's saying no one understands, they're the one who doesn't understand. So that's the point. They don't understand. Because their emotional state, like Brahma, is clouded. Brahma didn't understand. Because he had his own point, he had his own what he's trying to do, he has his agenda, and no one understands their agenda. Right? Because it's being spoken through an emotional state. His is the false ego of being the Lord of the universe. He can't understand that this little kid is God. Right? Then, only after some time, he's been shocked into that, then he realizes. So you also have to remember, Krishna sometimes has to use shock to wake you up. Right? So for Brahma that he creates, and he's in control, and here's something going on that he can't control, doesn't know where they came from, can't understand them, then it shocks him, then he wakes up. So that's how Krishna will get you. You think you're the Lord and controller of whatever it is, you know, your bar of soap, and then Krishna will create a situation. You know, you put your bar of soap slide off. You put it back, slides off. You know, you pick it up, you drop it. You know, you get a nice little flat corner, you know. Then Krishna shows you're not in control. You know, you bang your bar of soap, no one touches it, no one does. Yeah, Krishna lets you know. So, like that, Krishna gets you. But, does that person understand? No. That's the unfortunate. You know, is that even though Krishna's telling you, everybody else can understand it, we can't understand. So that's the thing. We always have to remember, understanding means intelligence. Realization, that's the mind. Right? The mind, realization means it's your value. So one has to distinguish between emotion, which is a feeling, and a realization, which is a feeling. The two absolutely different things. How can you tell the difference? The realization is constant, like intelligence, while emotion is flickering. So if they're in and out of this, like the person, let's say, is always, let's say, polite. So even if they're angry, they're still polite. You can tell they're upset, but they will do it in a polite way. So that's a value. Otherwise, how do they maintain it? You know, or they're well dressed. Right? They're well dressed. Doesn't matter the situation. They'll find what's the best dress for that situation. Appropriate, but the best of that. So that's a value. So that's a feeling also. But that's a feeling based on analyzing and all these different things. You come up with this value that this is what it is, and then you do that. So this is also a big problem. Is always you realize, no, that's a feeling. The mind appreciates the kirtan, but then you walk out, and then it also appreciates, you know, the latest gossip. So that means it was not realization. When you realize that only that is nice and the vijalpa is not nice, that's there, because then the value changes. So what is the value? That is realization. And what else is felt in the mind? That's emotions. And logic, understanding is in the intelligence. So when they say you don't understand means the feeling I'm feeling now, you are not feeling. You know, and the other person, yes, because of my intelligence, it's not worth feeling the feeling that you're feeling now. Because the feeling you have for what you're doing is not the feeling that is necessary. Right? So the person's desire that the whole universe feels the same feeling that they're feeling, then that's a platform which is insensitive. Right? They're thinking the others are insensitive, but the person themselves is insensitive. Because they feel the whole world should feel what they feel. Why they should feel what they feel? What's so special about it? Why do they have to react in that way? It's obvious that it should be another way. You know? And if it is something that is natural, then yes, people will feel that. So it's a very complex. So then how do you decide? Okay, then you can say, okay, so then people should, you know, how do they know when they should feel the way the person feels or not feel the way they should feel? But that's based by Krishna. Krishna sets that standard. Otherwise, how are you going to set it? How is it? Everybody has their own idea of what feeling they like and which they don't like. Is that, you know, somebody likes the peacefulness. Other people get bored out there. They like the, you know, it's happening in the city. You know, you put them right on, you know, what do you call it? You know, right downtown Manhattan, then that's okay. Now it's happening, you know. And other people, you have to put them way out in the forest, you know. Then they feel, ah, this is nice. So how does that work? So it's the value. So the one is peace, the other is energy. Right? You know, the person in the forest, no, but there's, you know, out here there is that energy and the underlying and all that. The person in the city, yeah, I feel comfortable here, it's peaceful, that's all. Does that make some sense?
You know, in last week's class, he said that we can't be attached to even one body.
Yes.
Otherwise we'll come back.
Not even half a body.
So, you also saying that we have to base, you know, everything on Shastra. Mm. So, in some of the Shastras, like, it says that if you take the remnants of Shalabhan, then you'll never take another life again.
Yes.
So, usually when it comes to all the other Shastras, you don't interpret what it says. But on this point, there's a lot of interpretation on what it means. You know, yeah, but it's your consciousness, you know, what it says, you know, and take your own, and what you have on. So then why do we have to make all this endeavor, you know, to become purified? Why don't you just take the remnants of childhood?
So how are you going to take those remnants if you don't make that endeavor? How often can you get it? Where do you get it? Right? You can just get it here. We can walk out in this garden and start chewing on the plants out there. We got it. Or, you understand? You still have to make that endeavor. But that's the point, is endeavor has to be made. So you have to, too, because you don't take birth again. But the point is just because you don't take birth doesn't mean to find that doesn't take birth. Where is that saying? You don't take birth again. Where does that happen? There's that. So that's the point, is then you're saying there's a contradiction, but if you can't define what is birth or where is taking birth again, then how do you know your question is valid? Yes, okay, but now just because you've gone to Gokul, does that guarantee you're going to go to Golok?
What if you don't want
to? Where else will you go? That's there, but then that can be done. It means those who join Lord Chaitanya's pastimes have three options. They can be in Braj Leela, they can be in Chaitanya Leela, or they can be in both. And at the same time as the connection of Lord Chaitanya is so wonderful, he can also bridge into Vaikuntha. So you can be in Chaitanya Leela and in Vaikuntha. Though you can't be in Vaikuntha and in Dhamma unless you start from there. So then the movement can give you that, Lord Chaitanya can give you that. But my point is in Gokul, how are you going to where the Lord's pastimes being manifest unless you develop love? How are you going to get in? Understand? Tathasta means no love, no hate. No attraction to Krishna, no attraction to material energy. So that's neither here nor there. So the living entity has to exercise their independence to make that choice. Because they are Sat-Chit Ananda. They can't just sit in one of them. They have to sit in all three. So you can find all three in the Lord's pastimes, or you can find the perverted reflection in the material world. You can't just stay in the middle. Right? So you have to get beyond. So you're taking that prasad, but why would you take it? Why would you want to get there? He says you never take birth again. What is your purpose? Why are you taking that prasad? Why would the question even come up that I should take the prasad? Right? Okay, I don't want to take birth here. Where do you want to take birth? Where do you want to go? Right? If it's just out of the material world, then you get as far as Brahman. Krishna says it's one path. So you take the path, just get out of the material world, stop there. Right? It's to go to Vaikuntha, then you have to go there. But you have to develop the love for the Lord of Vaikuntha, or the Lord of Dwarka, or Ayodhya, or Vrindavan. Otherwise, how will you get there? Not taking birth just means out of the material world. Right? But it didn't say you'll take appear in the spiritual world. That is done by devotion. Therefore, you can answer it as consciousness. Because our purpose is not just to not take another birth. Our purpose is to be able to serve Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Right? We're trying to get to that platform. And then if the Lord and his associates want to invite us in, we go. If they don't want to invite us in, we don't go. Does that make sense? So it's not that we don't interpret. It's a matter of understanding what's the essence. It means you've made a sentence. One, by taking the remnants of Shaligram doesn't take birth again. What is the essential point being made in this verse? To not take birth? Is that the essential point? You understand? This is the thing. This is literature. That's why there's so much misunderstanding, because people don't know grammar. Right? Means if you're talking grammar, it means you have to have a point you're being made. That's why you have to see it in the context of what is there. And if you look in there, it's not a chapter on how not to take birth in the material world. And there's various ways you can do that. You can fast to death also and not take birth in this material world. So it's not a chapter on, you know, 108 different ways to not take birth in the material world, right? It's talking about getting to the spiritual world, developing love for Krishna. So that is the main point. This is an instrument or object. Understand? By taking prasad, then you get the object of getting out of the material world, which will then give you your result of getting into the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So that's why that's the point Prabhupada says. If we don't have the religion, then there's mental speculation. Because you can take this and you can speculate on it, and you can just take it and argue it. That's what the grammarians do. That's what the impersonalists do. Is they don't have religion. They don't have therefore there's mental speculation. Impersonalist means they've given up religion. They've given up varnashram. So they have no religion. So, and they've given up the eternal religion, the topmost religion, the bhakti. So they don't have the devotional process. So they don't understand the nine processes of devotion, or there's nine levels from shraddha to prema. They don't understand this process. So then there's speculation. But if that is understood, then there's no speculation. Because you understand, is the point they're trying to make is you are trying to get into the spiritual world. How you're going to get in there is by bhakti. And what is some of the forms of bhakti? Bhakti is worshipping the deity. And in worshipping the deity, one of the most prominent elements is honoring the remnants. Right? Offering things to Krishna and accepting those remnants. Right? Offering it through the associates, and then after they have honored it, then taking the remnants, their remnants. That's maha prasad. Prasad is from Krishna. Then it's offered to the associates, it becomes maha prasad. Like that. So that's the. Does that make sense? Yes.
There's a point in the nectar devotion, I can't remember the exact quote, something along these lines. Prabhupada said that the different Shastra conjunctions shouldn't be seen as exaggerations, but they're true for some, but maybe not for all. Sometimes we see these things. These different results that will give the form of anger a lot. I think so. Like, hey, you know, even I might be a little bit of that. But generally speaking, with any of these, if we're sincerely trying to make spiritual advancement, then there's all kinds of that comes away that may not be so easily calculated, but it's still not.
Yeah.
It's kind of a flow, and you take whatever mercy you can.
Yeah. That's important. That's why in the ten offenses, one of the offenses to consider the glories of the holy name is exaggeration. For us, then we've just heard of that, so for us it's not a problem. But those who have grown up in a Vedic environment, where or at least like a Hindu environment, where there's so many different ideas, then within that realm you could take it as exaggeration. We see Gopal Chapala. When Haridas Thakur was talking about the glories of the holy, he said that's exaggeration. Because for him is that he knows how difficult it is to get liberation through the Jnana Shastras. Like that. So that here you can just chant the holy name and anyone without being, greatly austere or renounced or knowledgeable can just get liberation. Then he said no. So it's definitely a problem. Is that it can be taken as exaggeration, and then that may not apply to us means yes, you perform that activity, you will get to the heavenly planets, but it's not for us. We're into other activities that also can get you to the heavenly planets, but they'll take you beyond. Right? Chanting Hare Krishna can get you the holy heavenly planets. Gopal Kumara went by chanting. Right? He didn't do some big yajna. Just by chanting he went to that. He went all the way up to Brahmaloka. Just by chanting. So that can give, but that we don't that emphasize that. Why go to a lower place and get to a higher place? So it's a good point. One of the qualities of Narad Muni, he's very expert in working out contradictions in the scripture, seeming contradictions. Manu mentions there are no contradictions, just different angles on the same thing. But because of not knowing what's behind it, then we tend to take it as contradiction or exaggeration or like that. So it's a point we see is that the acharyas, we see Prabhupada gave the example, is that it has to be dealt with very delicately. Because it's true, but it may not apply to us. You know, it's like all these things. Like, you don't do your Shraddha rites, you know, the Pancha Mahayagyas to your parents, or all these things, you will go to hell. It's guaranteed. It's not, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's not one exception. But, as a devotee, you're already doing the highest sacrifice. And you are worshipping the original forefather, the Pitamaha, who's before Brahma, right? And then after Brahma, then you get to Prajapati. Because in the Shraddha rites, you only go back six generations. After that, you don't worry about it. It's not your business. So, that's all you're obligated to. But we're taking it all the way back to the original. So therefore, any forefather between us and Krishna is already automatically taken care of. So then some will say that's an exaggeration. No, that's just reality. And the other is true. It is true. You don't follow Krishna consciousness, then there's all these literatures that tell what you're supposed to do, then that's what you have to do. You're obliged. You know, just because someone is from doesn't interested in following the Vedic injunctions doesn't mean that they're not obliged to follow them anyway. You know, because Krishna makes the rules. You see, the common man, he's not feeling maybe obliged to follow the laws of the land, but he is. You know, he has to follow. He breaks them, he gets in trouble. Just that they don't connect it. Krishna is so nicely put that they don't connect it. Right? Somebody is not cooperative, then they can't understand why none of their relationships work. Right? So they'll blame it on everybody else. No, it's them. They're not following the laws of the land. Krishna's law is you have to cooperate with others. You don't follow it, there's a problem. Like that. So, but we don't connect it because we don't know the laws. You know? We don't know the laws. So when we know, then we can see what's beyond. You know? And Prabhupada explains, there's nothing major in the Vedic literature Prabhupada hasn't explained. And also explained what we have to follow, what we don't have to follow. Right? Like he says we should follow the Varnashram, but the Karmakanda aspect, the Jnanakanda aspect, we don't follow. Like that. But activities within Varnashram that may be described in Karmakanda that we are using for bhakti, that we use. Or the process of liberation that's described in the Jnanakanda, we use that, but not in their form. We use it in our own form. So activity is performed, knowledge is there. You know, we engage the material energy for elevating ourselves, and we therefore break the cycle of birth and death. Those are from the process of karma and jnana. And if you take it a step further, actually they're from bhakti, and karma and jnana have borrowed those from bhakti. Because there's nothing that goes on that's not connected to bhakti. There's not one aristocratic person in this planet that hasn't somehow or another come in contact with the devotional process. No one has one paisa on this planet without having performed the pious activity. No one has any beauty, any position, any knowledge without having performed the pious activities as according to the Vedic literatures. Not one living entity. Only if one doesn't have the vision, one thinks, no, they got those things on their own. No, they didn't get those on. Those came to them. The work that they're doing now, the guy has the billion-dollar business. Whether he had the billion-dollar business or not, he'd get the money. right? How he performs his billion-dollar business, that's going to decide how he gets money in the future. That's going to be what is his money next life, not this life. What he's got this life is because he performed pious activities according to Vedic literature. So that's not seen. So sometimes the devotees feel they're alone and they're kind of weirdo. No, the Vedic culture is what's going on in the universe. You know, what do you call it? You know, Indra, when he goes out to fight, you know, on his elephant, he's wearing a dhoti. You know what I'm saying? The apsaras, they come down to, you know, entice the most qualified person. They're wearing Vedic clothes. You know? They're not wearing, you know, something, you know, that some new modern fashion house has put out. You know, that wasn't what caught Vishwamitra's attention, you know, was her, the tinkling of their sassy ankle bells, or maybe it was the, you know, the latest Calvin Klein, you know, eyeliner. Or, no, it wasn't that. It was Vedic. So only in a small place here, then there's a few billion people who are a few billion living entities who are given the freedom to not follow the Vedic culture. Otherwise, everybody else in the universe and all the other living entities on this planet, all the animals, they follow it. You know, they're all following it. So just that illusion is given. That is, but otherwise, the only reason they have is because they follow the Vedic culture. There's no other reason. No one has one opulence, beauty, wealth, position, fame, knowledge, or renunciation, without having performed an activity according to the Vedic literatures. Not one. Like that. So in other words, the work that they do now is not actually the cause, you know, of what they're doing. It's coming from previous. Like that. It's the instrument through which you get your goal. This is the interesting thing. Karana means that through which you get what you're trying to get. You have a goal. I want to get money. I use my business. The business is simply the object through which you get it. But its original source is your previous activities. So that's the process. And this activity that you're doing then becomes the source for the next one. You know, it's just like one sentence is built on the last. One paragraph is built on the last. So the cause of paragraph two is paragraph one. So depending on what you said in paragraph one, that's going to create paragraph two. So you can't say paragraph two stands on its own. By writing paragraph two, I got paragraph two. No, by writing paragraph one, I got paragraph two. And paragraph two creates paragraph three. So we see in our everyday life, that's how it goes. We say, I'm cooking because I'm cooking. No, you're cooking because you cut the vegetables, because you wash the pots. You're only doing that because you went to the market and you got pots and you got vegetables. You only did that because you had money. You only did that because you had work. You only could do that work because that was your conditioned nature. You could do it. Where'd you get that from? So it always goes back. It means this idea that what I'm doing now is getting my result. No, the activity is not what's getting the result. The activity is the act through which the other things can function that you do get the result. That's the illusion. I think my work is what gets me the result. But it doesn't. Because the work has no meaning without you, without your instruments, without the other people, without your goal. Like that. So it doesn't stand on its own. That's the thing. A verb means nothing on its own. Work. So what? What work? So unless it's connected with some person, place, or thing, the verb has no meaning. So the person, place, or thing is what does the work. The person, place, or thing is it, a person, place, or thing is the result of your work. The source of that was a person, place, or thing. You know, like that. So we see is the place in which it will be done is a place, right? So the activity has no meaning unless it's in that environment. It just doesn't have any meaning. So that's the illusion. We think the work itself is the point. The point, it's never the point. The work can never be the point. And as soon as the work becomes a point, it itself becomes a person, place, or thing. Right? Does that make sense? Like you, moving. But that's not the point. Movement is a point. But movement has already become a person, place, or thing. So that's the thing. The activity itself is not the main point. But by doing that activity, then you can get what you want. That's the thing. But that what you're getting has to have an origin, and it will have a goal, a result. So there's something coming from the past, and it will give you something in the future. And the activity is now. So that's how the whole... So that's the... Sorry if this is... These are the kind of things that generally are dropped out of the... When our commentaries are translated. Like they translate Jiva Goswami's or Sanatana Goswami's commentary. This method of establishing the point is what's dropped out. Is the grammatical presentation. It means arguing the points of the verse on grammar. Like that. But you can see is that because of a lack of that, it means you communicate through your language. Your language has to have a system of communication. Otherwise it doesn't mean anything. So by not actually understanding the system of what, not understanding the system through which you're communicating, therefore then communication is not at its best. Because people don't understand what is the nature of the communication. So without understanding the grammar of communication, then actually the main point is not understood. Because the main point is going to come through a how you present it. It means that you're emphasizing a point as coming through an aspect of the grammar. That's why you see is that when those who would argue things, they were expert grammarians. Nimai Pandit, right? He was expert grammarian. He could defeat anyone because he knew exactly what he was saying, and he could find the fault in the other person. They didn't know exactly what they were saying. That's logic, is getting as close as possible to saying exactly what you want to say. That's logic. And to do that, they use grammar. Because why grammar? Because you're using speech, or you're using the written word, you're using words. And those words have a nature, they have a way they interact. So if you know how that function works, then you can get the two together. Just like they say, you take music. You have a melody in your head, and you want to produce that melody through an instrument. But unless you know how to operate the instrument, to that degree, you can operate that instrument. To that degree, what you are thinking is what you can perform. Right? So that's what you say. An expert musician is what he thinks is what manifests out of his medium of that he uses as an instrument, his voice or some other external instrument, is simultaneous. So in the same way as the grammarian, what he thinks, what he wants to say, is what comes out of his mouth in the way of words. So it's just one of many ways of doing it. That's why you see Prabhupada, when he's dealing with the Western mentality, he backs what he says up with shlokas, but he uses logic to get the point across. So Prabhupada is using all these points and systems of logic. But he doesn't do it in the, how you say, in the formal form of logic. He does it just naturally through how you would present it in the conversation in English. That's why sometimes people will say Prabhupada didn't go so deep, or Prabhupada didn't present, you know, very refined points or anything. These are fools who say this. Prabhupada's, whatever is there, he's presenting it from the topmost platforms, and he's using all these things. Just like he goes, he makes a point and then goes, some may say. Right? This is a rule from Panchanga Nyaya. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, in Vaishnava circles, nothing's presented outside of this circle of Panchanga Nyaya. It's not worth saying if it's not said within this framework. Panchanga Nyaya means you make your point. You make it clear to who you're talking to that this is what you're saying. You don't hide it. Then you bring up what may be doubts within that. Right? That there's a doubt. That somebody might say this. Or such. How many times have we read Prabhupada say, some may say? That's the doubt. That's the second point. Then he will explain what that doubt is. That's the third point. Because just because the doubt's there, it has to have some backup. Otherwise, you're just generalizing. I make my point and don't back it up. Then the same way as I can't make the other person's point unless I back it up. In other words, if you want to have a real argument, you have to know what the other person's saying. Just to say, they do this, that's kid stuff. Babies do that. An intellectual adult doesn't go, they. Unless he can explain what the they say. Ramanuja, Madhva, Srila Prabhupada, they can argue Shankara's philosophy down to its last point. They can make a full presentation of Shankara's philosophy. That's why they can defeat him. So when they say, some may say, and they're quoting Shankara, or they're quoting Jaimini, or they're quoting, they know what they're thinking, what is their method, what is their purpose, what are their arguments. Then they will present those. That's the third stage. Then the fourth, you bring it together. You show how actually what they're talking about is already within the first point that you made. Their doubt is already reconciled within the first point. Then the final, then you make the clear conclusion again that was there that the first point brought out. But now because you've been associated with it, you know more about what it is, so you can be more direct and clear what it is in your final siddhanta. And you see, Prabhupada always uses that, the way he works. You know? He'll say, in this verse, this word is significant. Like here, this one here, 61. The word aghara bhotam, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. Right? That means that is a major point. That is the point that's being got across. When Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second. Okay, so Lord Brahma is seeing who the absolute truth here, one without a second. Okay, that's describing the absolute truth, one without a second. So that is a pronoun or something like that, right? Who possesses full knowledge. Okay, that's the point that he's trying to get across. And who is unlimited, right? So that then, assuming the role of a child in the family of coward men and standing all alone, just as before with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the cows and calves. So, saw the absolute truth, he's doing all that, but what is it about who possesses full knowledge? Because he knew everything. He knew what Brahma's doing. He's in everything and besides everything. That's what Brahma understood. So therefore, this word is there. So that is, Prabhupada is just giving a grammatical trend. Then he says the word abhyayam, meaning one without a second. Now it's also significant, right? So then he goes on to that. So he goes through this. So Prabhupada's using it, but he does it so pleasantly and nicely. It doesn't get caught up and it doesn't have this like intellectual, dry, flavor to it. It's just so natural in that, but he's using it. So this is the difficulty. Sometimes devotees think, well, Prabhupada, because the way it is, it's so natural, he doesn't care for all this Vedic stuff. He uses it, but he's showing the mood how to use it. We have our own way. Others, they get all Vedic and they get all strange. They do their thing. But we have our way of doing it, our flavor. We discuss this knowledge, we get into these things, but it's very, very tasty. It's very, very wonderful. So then it comes to the point. So we see is when Prabhupada is doing those things, he's pointing out what's primary, what's secondary. Right? What's mukya, You know, he's saying we, it means that they're there at what's going on. So sometimes we don't follow because for us it's secondary. Because the goal that that activity will give for us is not important. And what's primary for us are the things that get the goal we want. Like that. So that way then you choose within it. Because the point is a noun can either be primary or secondary. Right? That's the thing. And the same word could be fit in either place. That's the fun of it. So, therefore, based on what is your theme, what you're trying to say, then it establishes whether it's a main primary noun or not. Right? Or whether it's a secondary verb or a primary verb. So then in there, then Prabhupada's pointing out here is that we have to make that discrimination. Then we can function within his books and within the Vedic culture. Otherwise, the tendency will be, we can't tell the difference. Okay, you know, they worship the Lord. Okay, so do other sampradayas. And you know, see devotees go off with the Shris and the Nimbarkas and the Vallabhas. Because they can't discriminate. Like that. Oh, they're devotees. They're worshiping Krishna. Yeah, but they're going to a different place. So like that, then there's a problem arises. So it's a does that make some sense? It means his point? Like that, as he was saying, as Prabhupada's saying, that one has to see what's there. So some are primary for us, some are secondary. Therefore, it appears that there is a difference of opinion. You know, and depending upon whether it's a main node or it's a secondary, then you'll have more and more aspects of it. Like that. So you get because it's just like that here, you're saying this verse here. Hunger, anger, and thirst. So that can be what's it? Raga, bhaya, krodha. Right? It comes into the same category. Because there is no idea that I'm God, I'm the enjoyer. So as soon as the sense gratification means, you have to think, I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. Only then you can be the enjoyer. So that means they're all devotees. So Prabhupada's already cut that by saying everyone's devotee, so their identity is serving the Krishna. Right? Then if that's there, then sense gratification can arise. As soon as sense gratification is arising, then that's how you can tell. Sense gratification is there, then you can tell there's controlling. This controlling, then there's the desire to be God. So someone may say, the administrators are controlling, the managers are controlling, but they're controlling according to how Krishna gives. Right? So, therefore, you can't say that that is then a symptom of sense gratification. Or materialism. Because God has authorized that kind of control. The other kinds, he hasn't. So then you can say that that control is going to result in sense gratification. Right? Does that make sense? So then in this way you get the difference between the things of what's speculative and what's not. Is that okay? I kind of think it's a little late. Several stuff. Grantra, thank you. Grantra, I should